Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Hi, welcome to Women in WP. I'm Angela Bowman.
I'm Tracy Epps.
Our guest today is Tori Capistron. Tori is the owner of Hooked on Code, a WordPress agency. She builds, redesigns, and maintains WordPress sites for companies who want a reliable partner, don't we all, and a level of control of their sites using Divi. Welcome, Tori.
Well, hello.
For those of you who have listened to our show, you know we like to start off each episode asking our guests how they got into WordPress. How did you get started?
So I went to school here in Dallas at SMU for business, and I have a business degree and a couple language minors. And when I graduated with my shiny marketing degree, everybody wanted to hire me for sales, which I'm not like made for. So I moved to Mexico. I sold most of my stuff and I put my two cats in bags and, not plastic bags, but, you know, carriers. And I got on a plane and I moved to Mexico and I lived at a resort on a beach with my now husband. Luckily that worked out. Otherwise that would be a really embarrassing story. And I was really bored because I had this amazing opportunity to like live on a resort in the, what's that area called? Quintana Roo, Playa del Carmen, the Yucatan Peninsula. And it was so cool and it was so beautiful. And I felt useless and unfulfilled and bored because I'm just such a high achiever. So I made up something to give me purpose. And that thing that I made up was I had just read the Paleo Solution. And I was like, this is going to save the world. So I probably would still. I still kind of think that. But I decided that I was going to figure out how to make some money with, like, please don't judge me, affiliate marketing. I just Googled, like, how to make money. Yeah. So I spent all this time learning about affiliate marketing, which I never ended up doing because it felt not right to me. So I just didn't do it. But in that process, I decided that I would create a website. I called it Primal Healthy Fit. I think it still exists. Don't judge it. But it became this passion project for me. And I spent 30 days, 30 solid days, like probably 8 hours a day. I created this, you know, learning experience. I pretended that it was still school and I learned HTML and CSS. And I took lynda.com, God rest her soul. I took lynda.com classes and did went especially into the horror of HTML email newsletter HTML that I know. So I just made it. I wanted to understand all of it because I wanted to like launch this thing. I wanted to I had a giveaway package and it was a big deal for me. So I built this really unattractive website, but with great content and with great intentions. Even a marketing plan and all that. And it was really fun. And it literally took me 30 days to create it because I wanted to learn all those other things along with it. And then about 6 months after I moved to Mexico, my now husband and I decided that we wanted to go back to the States. He lived in Austin most of his life. And I was from Dallas. And I said, hey, I think I'm ready to get a job. So we moved back. And right before we moved back, like the night before we were moving, he said, he's a chef. He said, I'd like to start an underground fine dining business, like on the side of whatever job I get. And I was like, cool, I will build you. It's called Chef Carlos Underground. It doesn't really operate anymore because he's got a senior executive chef job and has no time. But I built a website that with WordPress that was really good looking and, you know, responsive back in 2011. And it was really user-friendly and it took me 4 hours. So I realized that learning curve, which felt really steep, I'd already gone through it. So I spent so much time on it. I got all the way through it and I understood so much of the things that have to do with websites that aren't the actual website itself, the strategy and the content. I took the time to learn all that. So when I came back and I got a real job, I did much as everybody's story, you know, even Amy's, I think that like people just were like, you built this and I would like you to build one. And I would charge a couple hundred bucks here and there, and eventually figured out how to actually price things, and was doing work like that on the side. About a year into having a corporate job, I knew without a doubt that I didn't want that to be my path. I won't go into the reasons, but when you're an entrepreneur type, you figure that out at some point. So I figured it out, and it took me a year and a half to build up a client base to the point that I could quit and start my company, but I did. And it's, you know, no looking back since then. Immediately replaced all of my full-time time income and then doubled it the next year, and hence continued. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really, it's been a blessing of a journey and kind of a fun story.
I love that. When you said it'd be like that, I knew from the corporate that I didn't want to do that. I didn't realize exactly how entrepreneurial, how different that mindset was until I started working and doing some corporate stuff. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, this thing needs to be done. Well, I don't know how to do it, or it's not my job. And I'm like, but did you just learn it? You just do it. You just, like, that's just what you do. I mean, that I feel like is something that's always like such a big struggle. And I think that's a big reason why a lot of the like the women in WordPress that we have been talking to, they're like, well, I didn't have this thing, and so I just did it.
Yeah. Yeah. The plugins that people create, I needed it. And I don't know. I just made it.
I just made it. Like, I mean, I just did this thing. And I wonder how much of that is personality and how much of that is just the fact that like we as women have been much more resourceful, or have to be, because we're kind of put to that higher standard.
I wonder that too. We have we are all women at the moment. I have really high expectations of certain traits that are more prominent in women. I mean, I'm not trying to be gender biased, but I have interviewed lots of people. And so through that, I expect a really high level of proactive communication. Like, if you're going to work on our team, you can't spin your wheels and not reach out. There can be no pride. There can be no chip on your shoulder. Like, it can't be there, or you will take us down. And I can't do that to my team, and I can't do it to my clients. So I wonder that as well. And what's interesting is that we use this tool called Culture Index. And there's this big manual that goes along with it. But we use a tool called Culture Index for like pre-interview trait surveys. So they're not strengths. It's not a strength survey like a lot of people use, which is helpful for like, oh, hey, your strength is that, so I'll make sure that you get to use that in your job. This is more like measuring if you are attentive to detail and if you have follow through, and whether you use inductive or deductive reasoning, and if you're a troubleshooter, and how clever are you? Like, literally, how clever are you? And how long do you have to go between when you start a difficult task and having to take a mental break? All those things I'm now like gathering actual objective data on. And that's fascinating to me. I have not like gone and done a gender comparison of certain traits, but I'm gonna. Mm-hmm.
Well, we will put a link to that book in the show notes for anyone who's interested. And tell us again the name of it. It's called
It's called Culture Index. And this is actually a workbook. Yeah, this is a workbook you get by like actually using the program. But it's more of a, it's actually something to subscribe to as a business. It's like it's an annual subscription business tool type thing. I'm a big fan.
That is fabulous. And what it makes me think about is that often when you see those postings for tech jobs and they ask for a certain number of years of experience, and one thing they're not assessing is all of those things that you're speaking about. Like,
yeah.
How resourceful are you? How quickly can you figure something out? All that is amazing. I feel like that's more of a criterion that women might end up getting excluded because they don't have a very specific background, but they could be the one who's able to more quickly troubleshoot a problem.
Absolutely.
Or use that deductive reasoning.
Exactly. And then learning that. And so like, I have been having the hardest time with, you know, like applying for jobs because I, you know, I'm like, well, I just do the things. Like, that's just, you know, I just do that. And there's no space in like your resume for that, or like how to present yourself. Like, there's no kind of like way of the, like, because you are intentionally looking at those things, like that is going to find those quality people. But how do I put that onto a resume? I don't know. Like,
I'm not sure, although I will send you the link for our company's survey so that you can take it. And then you and I can like, I'll tell you like what your pattern says to me about
I love
you.
It.
And then you can use those words, because those words would attract specifically people who are using this tool, be like, I don't care about anything else. I just saw the dead ringer like traits that I'm looking for right there.
Like in the cover letter.
That's perfect.
Instead of just please, 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 please hire me.
Yeah.
I really, 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 really want to work for you.
Love it. Yes, totally.
That's awesome. I'm
super excited about that. 'Cause yeah, absolutely.
So this definitely brings us to a big question, as you're talking about building a site for yourself, building a site for your husband's business, other people saying, oh, you did that, will you do it for me? But there's a huge transition that you made from being this kind of solopreneur, charging $200 for a website, to being an agency with employees. How many employees do you have now, and how long did it take you to make that transition, and what challenges did you face? What advice would you have for people in doing that?
Yep. So we have a core team of four, and then we have a couple really key contractors that they know how we work, and they know how we do it, and our protocols in and out. So I consider them core team members, but I've tried to hire them and they're like, no, I want to be my own boss. So they're wonderful, but core team of 4/6. And I would say last year, which was 2020, was the year that I told myself I wouldn't swear, but it's like just like my normal thing. So I'm having to find other words for things. but 2020 was the year that we figured out a lot of hard lessons. I'd say that we grew a pair last year about like in a lot of ways. A lot of ways. We grew a pair when it came to deciding that a new hire was not going to work. And we figured it out like within a week, and we hung on for another week. And then we cut the cord, right? Like 2 weeks, we're in and out, and we're not going to spin our wheels. We're not going to waste the time if it's not the right match. We shifted away from nonprofit work, and we offboarded that sector to an agency that is structured to work very well with nonprofits, which we are not. So we were like learning these really hard lessons and then accepting the lessons last year, because that's the other hard part. So I would say last year was when we figured out these are the positions we need to fill. We had a core team of two at the beginning of last year. So, that was that way for years before that. So how long did it take? I don't know. We're 6.5, almost 7 years old. I think that the first 2 years were basically me operating under a company name, trying to develop policies and pricing. And it was just me and figuring all that out. And then in 2016, I hired a mix between an executive and a personal assistant, because I was just a mess. And I had a 10-month-old, and momming is not like my primary strength. So I did not want to be a stay-at-home mom. I needed help with like everything. So on top of having a nanny, I was like, I need help with life. So I had this executive / personal assistant, and that was the most logical first hire ever, because it doubled my time that I could be spending on work. And I think that was a crucial first step. That person is still with me and is now my integrator, which is kind of an operations person. That's there's this great book called Rocket Fuel that we use as a team. I'm the visionary, she's the integrator. She will be with us as long as she wants to be. She's my work spouse. So it did take, I want to say 3-4 years before I really figured out that I wanted this to grow so that it could be the best place to work ever. Like before that, I was like, I got to figure out this thing and life and being a new mom and having an employee. And it's just a different game now. We're just different game. Plan to win it. Want to make as many jobs as I can make. Want to give as many people as possible an opportunity to like be Tracy's, like say I just figure it out and I am a techie and I want to be myself. So one of our core values here is authenticity. So if you identify as a mermaid, you get to be a mermaid. Like that's awesome. And it's unusual. I love that I can actually be 100% myself in my job. And so I'm trying to create that for others.
You almost could have another business coaching other businesses on this whole process. We would love to have you do a WordCamp. Have you ever spoken at WordCamps or anything like that?
Yeah, it was a while ago, but I have, and it was a wonderful experience.
I love it. I just love that mentality that you have with your agency and the business. You grew last year. You learned a lot of lessons, but just like business wise, what kind of things were struggles with, not person wise, but just like, you know, sales or what's, you know, now that the kind of the landscape of the world has changed to much more digital focus, how has that affected you and your business?
So, great question, Tracy.
You're welcome.
What we learned, which was hard for us to learn, was that our recurring care plans, which we were very reluctant to start in 2019, saved our tuchus in 2020. Like we would have probably had to lay off people if those had not been established 8 months prior. So what we did is we changed our policy to allowing some clients to opt out of care plans where we were maintaining their websites on our server. We changed our policies. We realized the security impacts of having sites on our server that were not technically up to date. We talked about it internally about how we don't really like changing policies that affect how much money clients have to give us, but this felt like a really important one so that we could stay operational, keep our websites on our server, like our whole server secure, and then make sure that we were staying in touch with our clients. So we shifted from having an optional care plan structure to a required care plan structure. And we talked about it for about a 6-month period. We kind of trickled it amongst our clients. And then by November, we were saying, let me help you shift your site off of our server. And we were charging for it, but let me, you know, give us this much money and we will handle this migration for you. Or you can stay on our server if you just opt into a care plan. So that was a learning moment for us. It's going to be a very important part of our business strategy moving forward is we don't require a new care plan client to go through a redesign or a rebuild. Some agencies that are a little bigger than ours require that. We're not at that point yet. So if you had a developer custom code your whole site overseas and it's giving you trouble and you need a good agency to support it, we will go ahead and take that and be your trusted partner. At some point you will redesign it, obviously, because it's not, you're going to hit a wall and you're not going to be able to do what you need to do. But also moving forward, any project that we take, we are explaining in the proposal process, this is a required ongoing expense and here's why, and here's what you get for it. So that was a big, it was a learning experience. I kind of fight things like that I see that other people that have been in the industry longer than me, I see that they've made that realization and they've made those policy changes. I hear people talk about them on webinars and I still fight them. And I think part of it is because I want to make sure that any decision we make is actually appropriate for our business, our bottom line, our clients, because I get so much advice from all these wonderful mentors and advisors that I have, which I'm so grateful for. And not one piece of advice have I been able to take and actually just plug in. And that's frustrating because I've got all this great advice. And as much as I try, I'll get a great example of a pitch deck from someone. And I'll be thinking, I bet it's time for me to put some of our work examples and our culture and some awards. I bet it's time for me to put that in a deck so that I can send it to people. And I'll sit down with an example of a great pitch deck. And I'll go, I can't just plug my stuff into this. It's not what I need. And so that's frustrating. I think as a human, I also get frustrated about life lessons like that. I'm like, somebody's figured this out. Why can't I just like access the divine consciousness of that lesson being figured out by like probably 5 billion people at this point? Why do I have to figure it out myself? But alas, we do.
That is how it works. I mean, you have to work through your own process with it. And you also are bringing your own unique wisdom and ability to work with people and your own way of navigating those relationships. And so the way that you maybe feel comfortable in navigating the relationships with these clients is that it wouldn't be you to say, hey, we need to push you through this process. And I feel the same way. I mean, I listen to all the Nathan Ingram and different people do these great talks. And it's like, there's a lot of things I can adopt. Like one thing that I've adopted is that I host everyone on my account with a really good managed web host, because the different hosting configurations were a variability that caused so much headache and pain points for me during the year. And I just decided I made that was my 2021 decision, is everyone's got to get off of their other million hosts and be under one house. And part of that is I need some measure, like you said, of control of the site, because it doesn't make sense for you to host a site that could be having challenges. Though with this hosting account, everyone's very siloed. So not one site won't like infect other sites, but they may run up a bunch of resources, which I might have to pay for memory, CPU and that kind of thing. But anyway, you mentioned in your letter to us that you were part of this Entrepreneurs Organization Accelerator Program, and you read 2 to 3 business books a month.
I do.
Like, girl.
I do.
Teach us, preach us, tell us, like, what is this doing for you? And
So in EO, there are learning days every quarter, and they are on 4 topics, and they repeat every year. Learning day for cash, strategy, execution, and people. And those are the 4 pillars in Vern Harnish's book, Scaling Up.
I used to do this program. I was the person who put the book together for this program.
Oh, amazing.
Years ago. Yeah. So I worked with Vern Harnish and Patrick Teen. And so I worked for them for years. And
you worked with the dude who wrote the book on.
Yeah. So I would do. Well, and I didn't, like, I never met him in person because I'm a freelancer. So what I did is I put together EO's whole book, like the booklet that they use to train people. Yeah. And it was like this major, like I'd have to go to Kinko's and get this huge thing printed out. And it was such a, and then get it shipped to wherever they were hosting the workshops. And I'm sure now it's very virtual. And when I was at Web Summit in Lisbon 2 years ago, I ran into the guys there may have been one woman with EO there. So that, like, when I saw that, I'm like, that looks so familiar to me. So when did you start with EO? It was this year?
I joined the EO Accelerator program at the end of 2019.
Okay.
And it is absolutely one of the best things that I have done as someone who, when I finally made that decision of the primary purpose of me running a business rather than just being a high-rated freelancer that is trusted, is to create jobs. And I actually also would really like to change the industry. Crazy, but there's too much bullshit and there's too much smoke and mirrors, and it does not need to be that way. So that is one of my missions. But when I joined EOA, which was a recommendation from a dear friend of mine who was a past client who has a interior design firm, I all of a sudden felt like I had been given the playbook to success if I just worked hard enough. And like, listen, you tell me what to do and you show me that it works, you will not have to remind me to do a thing. You don't have to encourage me. Like I'm just gonna hit the ground running. I'm gonna stay up all night doing whatever it is that you told me. I was the best student ever because you assigned homework and it was like, read the whole book before the next class. I read the whole book before the next class. I was like, why would I not do that? The point of me being in school is to like learn, right? Why would I not do that? So call me crazy, but I felt this huge sense of relief because I knew that that was a goal of mine. I wanted to get through the dip of a million, still working on it, but it'll happen. It'll probably happen in the next 24 months. And I feel like I have the tools to do it. I have the community that supports me and says, no, you're focusing on the wrong thing right now, right? Like based on your financial statements and these things that you don't understand yet, I can tell that your problem and where you need to focus is X, Y, and Z. And it's just so nice to have, that's where I get the majority of my mentors. I also have a beloved mentor, unofficial. I've never actually asked him to be my mentor, in Jeffrey Zeldman, who's been in the web industry since the beginning of time. And I adore him. And now he works for Automatic, which is so cool. So I absolutely adore that program and what it brings me and the guidance that it brings me. The books that are on my reading list, which is insane, are 95% from like recommendations in the learning days. So at the end of like People Learning Day, there will be a big slide that's got 9 to 12 books related to people. And I would buy like two at a time and would just say, I'm gonna read these this quarter because this is kind of my people focus quarter. And at the end of last year, I just decided to go on Thrift Books and I bought a used copy of every book that had been recommended in the EO program because I'd now been through all the learning days. And I was like, I'm done effing around, man. I have to make more jobs. I have to make this work. I have to grow this company. Like it's do or die. It's this year. It's 2021. And there are no excuses. And there's knowledge inside these books that I don't have that will help me succeed. So I'm reading Worth Doing Wrong right now by Arnie Malham. And I get to have coffee with him and virtual coffee with him next week, which I love when authors and CEOs do that. I'm obsessed. I went through Rocket Fuel this year already. I have done The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. I'm looking at my shelf, Who, which is like people related, Good to Great, Start with Why. There's a couple others that I've actually been through. Ooh, The Dip by Seth Godin. Ooh, that's so good. It's so good. So yeah, I'm just like, I need the information. I need it in my head. So I have to get it in there somehow. So I do one of those as an audiobook every month. And then the other two are reading. I like decked out a reading bench in my house, like fluffy pillows and little bookshelf. And it's so nice. So reading is really important to me this year. And it really did start in 2021. I stopped drinking coffee because I felt like it was doing the opposite to my body that it did to everybody else's. So I was like, this isn't helping. I got rid of it. I've had more energy this year than I have ever had. So I don't know if that's a direct correlation, but it feels like it. And yeah, I'm just being really intentional about how I spend my evenings because it's really easy to let that get away from you, but I need it. I need
that.
That is
amazing. That is,
you heard it here first, you folks. Give up coffee and read lots of books.
Yeah,
there you go.
We're starting a video segment as soon as we can get the, you know, intro and outro designed in a way that I accept. And it's called, there will be one swear word here, but it is the title of my segment. It is Bitchin' Books for Business. And there's going to be little 3-4 minute video segments of like literally whatever I'm reading right now. I dog ear the pages I want to talk about. And I just kind of share the parts of books that were hard for me to read because it showed me something that we need to work on or that we really suck at, or that I suck at as a human. There's a lot of that. Or like things that we're going to start that I'm hoping to find a community around people that are doing them. So we use Profit First. That's another book that I didn't mention. We use Profit First in our agency in terms of our banking and accounting and like I'm obsessed with that. I could spend an hour talking about it, but I won't. But that's something that when we were starting it, I was able to put out a message and just say, this is new to us and we're going to make it work for us. But I would love anyone's input that has ever tried this and implemented it in their business. So this is going to be a really cool way for, I think, some people to understand what our culture's like, because me showing up on camera talking about all the books that I'm reading it shows a lot about our culture, because we are very big on continuing education. And if you want to read a book, you're going to get paid to read that book, like on my dime to read that book. And if you want to learn Arabic, you're going to get paid on my dime to learn Arabic, because it is going to make you a better employee. It will. It'll make you a better human, and it will make you a better employee.
Do you need any UX people?
We need good people all the time. We're right now kind of in this, I'm having a hard time balancing out the kind of traits that we're looking for, because we use that survey culture index as we're screening people and decide if we interview them or not. And I may have this profile in my head about, okay, someone who is self-motivated, but not so much that they're not going to want to work for another person. And I need somebody slightly introverted, because we are a remote company. And even if they are client facing, they're not on the phone all day. So I need to, for them to be happy, they'd have to be okay with that. And I need someone who moves pretty fast. All of this we can read in that survey. And then I need someone who's really, really attentive to detail and has great follow through. So that may be this profile that I have created. But as we're interviewing people with a certain profile, I'm hearing things that I haven't quite figured out how to screen for yet, like humility. We had a great interview with someone whose skill set was perfect, hit the ground running, perfect. And we even looked at our core values and we were like, I think we can check off all these, but it wasn't a good fit. And so I had to go talk to my integrator and say, our core values aren't right, because I can't offer this person a job because there's no humility. There's no understanding that there's more to learn, that you're never going to know it all, that you aren't perfect. I mean, literally we heard all those things in this interview of not only am I great at what I do, but I didn't really have any weaknesses. Every boss would give me a 10 out of 10. I've gotten promotions. And I don't doubt it. And I don't doubt that person would be an excellent employee at another company, but it wouldn't work at ours. So, you know, and I think it wouldn't work in the industry very long anyway, because this industry does not allow for that level of confidence or Aristotle complex or whatever you want to deem it. It doesn't allow for it. Things change too often. And there's a new plugin that does a better job than the one that you've been using for 5 years. And if you aren't willing to switch, like, what's that going to do for your profits? And what's it going to do for your clients?
One of my biggest pet peeves, this is why, like, is someone that, like, I am an expert at this. And I was like, as soon as you...
For
that's
now.
The quickest way. Yeah, exactly. That's the quickest way to be wrong, is to be certain that you are right. And like that, and especially in user experience, like we talk about, it needs to be research driven. It is user driven. We do all of these things, right? But then they're like, I'm an expert. How? How are you an expert? Like, you may have expertise in these things, but you always have to approach something as, I am not only like willing to, but almost expecting and wanting to be wrong and proven wrong from that research. Because otherwise,
I love that thought. That's the book. Yes, that's awesome. Right now. It's worth
Tori's it. Showing us the Worth Doing Wrong book, which we will link to in the show notes. Nice. That is so fabulous. I had an opportunity to work with someone on a project who's in the UK, and I hadn't had to share a dev job with this amount of intimacy and trust because of how the project was going to go. It's like we needed to be, we were crossing each other a lot in what each of our tasks were. So and we needed to kind of pitch in with each other, you know? And at first the owner of the company was a bit reluctant to have me speak with him because she wanted to manage us separately. And I'm like, he and I really need to talk. And it made me nervous. And I tried to pull out of the job. It's like, if I can't talk to this person, I can't really guarantee that I can do my job because they're going to be doing things that are going to affect my job. And when we did finally get a chance to really work together, it was such a pleasure to realize that, oh, he was just so sweet. He was always like, yeah, sure, I can do that. Or, you know, and to communicate and all, yeah, to have that humility, but then also to have the graciousness of not fighting, you know, not saying my way's the right way or anything. And we were just able to toss things back and forth to each other. Hey, could you look at that? Oh, and we were in different time zones. Hey, I'll take care of that. And while you were sleeping, I did this.
Yeah, that's, that's a lovely, lovely it was so, dynamic.
And now I just wish that now I could just start my own company, you know, well, I have my own company, but I just want to hire him and have him, you know, when you find that person that you just implicitly trust and who's also going to be honest and who's also not so attached to it, who's willing to let it go and let you run with something. And then you run with something and then you find what your mutual strengths are.
What do you
think
that is? What, like for you, what's that word? If you were going to go say, I am starting,
I want that person.
Yeah. And this is a person with blank, like this value or this trait or this quality. What is that for you? Is it honesty? Is it clarity? Is it transparency? Is it ethics?
Malleable?
Well,
like it's really, he was so interesting. Part of it was, willingness. That would be one thing. Like some developers,
ooh, that's a good word,
get really stuck. Like when you're stuck in rightness, you're often not stuck. You're not able to go into willingness. And so he was never like fighting anything. I might be tend to be the one to push back, you know, but he would just,
that feels like also a really good, like a true team player. Like that's kind of a lame, that's sort of a little bit of a lame vanilla way to put it. But I know that that's something that we're always trying to, we're trying to figure out how to screen for that positively and then against things like, you know, too cocky, not open to suggestions, stuff
rock
like that.
Star.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So team player, but yeah, what are the qualities of a team player? And the team player is willingness to try things, willingness. Like if the boss says we really want it to work XYZ and they're like, oh, well, let me try that. Let me try to make that work. And So he had very much a willingness, but he has a high aptitude in, like, let's say JavaScript, which I don't have any aptitude in. And so when it was that kind of thing, then I would push it to him. And when it was more of a PHP logic kind of thing that had to do with how to integrate with a plugin, then that would get pushed to me, but he was also capable of jumping in on that too and reading my code. So there's trust. I think there has to be a lot of trust and not having that cockiness.
Isn't that like that, you know, overlap,
it's like magical.
That, like, kind of, it's like that almost like childlike wonder of, like still having that. Because when I was working in corporate and then I also was teaching at the university in Milwaukee, and I interviewed the manager for the UX and I said, well, like, what do you look for in a junior UX person? Like that they need to be successful. And so I use that as my lesson for the day, whatever. And he just says, he's like that wonder, of trying things out, that playfulness with your with your profession that, you know, you don't take yourself so seriously, but you do take yourself seriously. That's your way of taking yourself seriously is by not doing it. It's like,
it's too bad. Then, we all take ourselves too seriously.
I really, especially
on this podcast,
especially here for, yep. I sure hope people go and check out the video.
Intent. Watch the video. Yeah, no, when you talk about that wonder, I feel like with this person there is just a kind of an innocence, and you know, there could be developers who kind of get that jaded, hardened kind of attitude. So it's a lack of attitude. So I'd say what you want is willingness and no attitude. And what's the word for no attitude?
Ego. Yeah, ego. Yeah, we it's interesting because the kind of that kind of dynamic that you described with this person and their willingness is something that we kind of inherently take a step further into our process with the client that serves us really well. And I've found like cuts out a lot of the unnecessary back and forth time, which is that if a client, you know, client has lots of ideas. So they love to share them. And we don't fight that because it certainly doesn't help to fight it. We need to just show them, is it a good idea, a bad idea? Is it going to serve you or not serve you? So with our projects, we're showing, we kind of do them in sprints. We'll build a couple pages, make sure that the design of the, you know, whole website and the aesthetics and the look and feel and all that is settled before we go build the rest of it. So we don't have to work backwards. But each of these kind of chunks of the project that are basically built out completely, we will go to the client and screen share. We used to do it in person, but we'll screen share and talk them through the decisions that we made and why we made them. We don't just say, what do you think? We actually have to step them through it and go, hey, the reason that we took your copy and we rephrased it in this way is because we're trying to agitate the problem, which is a proven method of getting people to feel the pain and then want to engage with you. And the reason that there's the same button 7 times is because of the average of it taking 6 times for someone to see the exact same message before they take action. So there's data and there's an explanation from our experience behind all that. And Tracy, you can't see her if you're just listening, but she's like vehemently nodding and like,
it took me years of running my own company before I realized that, like, where I'd be like, oh, well, you know, cause all these things, they're like, oh, do you want this or do you want that? Like all these designers, like that's kind of thing. Like here's 2 options.
Stop asking them. Just
exactly. Like that's where you say, like, that's where your expertise comes in, and you bring them along in that journey. You sell them with it. And that whole thing, because like someone, I had a colorblind person, he says, well, I don't like that color. And I was like, well, that's not like, like, that's not the point. The point is that this is supposed to provide this purpose. And he's like, well, I like this color. Like, okay, if you don't frame it in a way of this is the reason why, then it's easier to just say, well, I don't really like that color.
Yeah.
And then make it just superficial, like,
and that gets whatever. Buy-in. Like when you're explaining it to them, then they can ask questions. You answer the questions and they could say, hey, I don't think that's going to work for our business because, and you go, oh, that's a great point. It might not. Let's adjust it a little bit. And now they feel like they've been involved. They have buy-in. They feel like they're part of the project. And when they go, hey, what, you know what? I'm not loving blank. I'm not loving that color. And you go and explain, this is why it is that choice. You can talk and say, why don't we look at, like, right now, not like later, like right now, why don't we look at some other color choices that would achieve the same goal and the same contrast and the whatever we're trying to do, get the same level of attention. And let's see if you like any of these other ones better. Not like what color you want. Let me still be the, let me still lead you. Let me still be your guide. Let me show you that these are the other choices we considered. We didn't pick them because of these reasons. But if you like one of them better, that's a compromise we can make that we still
they
feel
still
achieves
fulfill,
the goal.
Yeah, they still fulfill the purpose. And that whole, like, because I always like that reframing and redirecting when clients, that kind of education of the client of like, oh, well, I want to do this, I want to do that. Or I think this should be it. Well, okay, you're coming up with a solution, but I'm going to ask the questions now to figure out why you came up with that solution. What are you trying to address? And then we go from there. And so we're not saying, no, that's a bad idea. We're saying what's behind that. And now we're going to start putting our brains together.
I do this to my husband in normal conversations, and he hates it.
I love it.
He will make a statement and I'll go, why do you think that? And he's like, why are you trying to prove me wrong? And I'm like, I'm not. I just want to understand why you think that. And he just thinks things and then out it comes. And when I try to probe, like, what thought went on behind that? He's like, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But it drives him nuts. But with clients.
I had an ex that just made them mad because I would be like, but they're like, stop asking me. I said this. I was like, but I want to understand why. So I can now recommend a restaurant that you would want to, because I know the reasons why you don't want to go to that one. Is it because of the lighting, or is it because it's too spicy?
Yeah.
Like what? So these are the things
up, like, this great example I have of this project that went awry. And it was, when it was all said and done, it was a great, I have horrible anxiety. And it was a great reminder to me of an example, an actual case study of, this looks pretty bad, but it might not be. So like, chill out. You don't have to go dig through your medicine cabinet. Let's just let's take a breath and let's have a conversation. And it's it's that conversation. You have to be, when the emails are starting to frustrate you, get out of email. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh,
get
my
out.
Gosh, yes.
When you get a voicemail or an email from a client that says, I just looped in some stakeholder you didn't know existed, even though tomorrow's launch day and he doesn't like these 7 things and we can't launch. Do you know what that does to my cortisol? It's not good. I probably lost 2 days of my life because of that.
Just hearing this makes me.
Scientifically, I died 2 days earlier because I got that email. But when I finally pushed back and I go, we need to all get on a Zoom. We have to all get on a phone call together. And we need to have a screen share. And everyone who has had buy-in also should be there, because they're going to take some of the weight off me and say, well, we actually looked at this already and here's why we made that decision. But also, when it came down to it, there was this blanket, it's not right, it's not what we want feedback, which, by the way, we don't get that feedback because we listen really well and we ask all those questions, Tracy, mm-hmm. you're talking about. We get to understand the actual problem. So we're not going to make something that isn't what you wanted because we listened. So we got that very odd feedback, very odd. It has happened one other time in probably 200 projects. And it was one of my first freelance things. And what I realized, we got on a Zoom and we talked through things. It ended up that this stakeholder, but he couldn't verbalize it until we got on a Zoom together. He didn't like how tall the hero was. So we didn't have it as 100 view height. It wasn't full screen, mm-hmm. but it was close. So it was very impactful. I loved how it looked. Everyone else loved how it looked. It had a very, very on the spot message. You could tell what this company did in like 5 seconds. And that's the point. And it had a way to give them money. Like, they should know what you do and they should know how to give you money in like 5 seconds. So it achieved that. And this stakeholder didn't like how tall it was because he felt like the message right below it was equally important. And he wanted to be able to see both of them. And because both of those sections had the same call to action, he felt like it was overkill. And that makes total sense. Like, when we got down to it, and so I was able to adjust it. We got it to the point, he goes, oh, this is much better. And he had nothing else to say. That was it.
Yep.
That was it. So sometimes, Tracy, like you're saying, it's because it's too spicy. Like, did I design it too spicy for you? Is it the wrong color? What is it? But some people, and it's usually people, I found it's technical people who don't have to exercise these specific mental muscles and they don't have to explain a lot of what they do because they are the experts and they are trusted. But a lot of times they can't verbalize it. And what better way than for us to get on a face, like, I can see your eyeballs, I can see the whites of your eyes, and you're looking at the same thing I'm looking at, and we will figure it out. Because I mentioned this before we started recording, but our company, our agency has 100% happiness guarantee. So you hire us for a project, and you're not happy with it at the end, you have to promise to work with us. You have to promise to communicate. But if we get to the end of this project and you're not happy, we will gladly give you all of your money back and you can return the website. It doesn't happen though. But that's how much I'm willing to bet on our willingness to like show up through the tough stuff or through things that aren't going maybe the way that they thought it should, or maybe the way we thought it should. And I think that policy is, it kind of bristles me every time that I even talk about it, because it's risky, like it's gutsy. I think it holds us to a really good standard that I'm happy about, even though it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I think this all, you know, just to kind of wrap it up, since we are getting probably close to our time, is that it's really speaking to empathy. And
yes,
perhaps the thing that we all need from our team members and our relationships with our clients is a lot of trust and a lot of empathy. And when we, when you have trust and empathy and willingness, you can get, you had empathy enough to get on a Zoom call with them. They had trust in you enough to talk to you about their process and what was going on. And then you had the willingness to make the change. And maybe those three things kind of overlay all of your other little.
I think you're right.
Culture. And
what a great way to guarantee success. You know, those aren't businessy terms, but if you use them, you're going to be really successful.
Yeah. True. Well, so thank you so much for sharing so honestly and deeply about all of your processes.
Delightful.
Before we go,
yeah,
where can we find you on the internet?
Our website is delightful.af. So you can find us.
I love it.
You can find us there. And I'm not very, active on social right now because the world is burning and I have anxiety, but I am on LinkedIn. So if you want to connect or get a virtual coffee, that's where you can find me and I will respond.
How lovely.
Thank you for listening. Interested in being on the show? Sign up on our website, womenandwp.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and join our Facebook group to have conversations with other women in WordPress.